You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS. With Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Ginger Quill.
No, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story. Robert Pattinson killed a clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right. I said tune in weekly.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Bear. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's my co-host, Jeff Bear. This is episode 383 of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. Did you all miss us last week? We were gone.
I got to be honest, I did miss us a little bit.
Did you?
Just a little bit. Yeah.
You know, our good friend Dan Mecca, was in town while you were out of town.
Actually, I should clarify. I missed Dan Mecca.
There you go. That makes more sense.
Thanks.
And he observed that he missed that we hadn't done a show, because usually he listens to the show immediately. He sits there, just keeps hitting refresh on his computer, like Thursday night, Friday morning, until the podcast shows up.
Man. So yeah. Just no sleep in Brooklyn until he gets that show.
Queens, but yeah. Queens. And so last week he was very despondent, really, that there was no show. Really, really took the whole weekend for me to soothe his nerves. But hey, while we were gone, you know what we did, you guys? We released a commentary of what movie, Jeff?
Back to the Future.
That's right. We recorded a commentary for that movie, and it's on. You can download it now. Agents download it for free. And if you don't know how to do that, and you're an agent, let us know. Other people can pay $2 for it.
Or become an agent, and you'll get it and everything else for free.
Everything, all the other commentaries we do. What else did we do? We did that other one, Princess Bride, not long
Princess
ago.
Princess Bride, and forever ago, our first one, Predator.
Predator, yeah.
That's out there.
So anyway, go to moviebs.com, and you'll see a link there on the right side of the page for where you can get them things and listen to them. And the Back to the Future one, by the way, I think if that's a movie that you're really familiar with, you can probably listen to that commentary without having the movie on at the same time. I think a lot of what we say is pretty, like, you'll get which scene we're talking about if it's a movie that you know pretty well, I think. So
yeah.
So don't feel like you have to wait till you've got night to sit down and watch it with the commentary. You can just listen to us talk about it.
Also, I think we are improving our strategy on commentaries. I think we're getting better.
We're figuring out how to do it the best way that'll make for the most good experience for the listening people.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we have an iTunes review before we start this show.
Old Time Radio Voice in 5, 4, 3.
Hang on, I lost it. There it is, I found it again. Not the voice, the review. This is written by Film Cans. The subject is Eric, yes, his sidekick, not as much.
Wait a minute, they've turned the tables.
Eric D. Cinder is great. His reviews are insightful and interesting. Even his aw shucks, the new Leave It to Beaver naivete, the 80s revival series, not the original, isn't too grating because he has a way of getting his opinion across that is concise and intelligent. His sidekick, Jeff, however, is like listening to someone from several stories above your head trying to tell you what movies to see from a high-rise window while you stand on the ground below looking into the sun. He's so much taller than me and seemingly annoyed with my lowly height, and it comes across in every review. Despite the sidekick's brain's distance from the Earth, where most of us live and call home, the show is still enjoyable, because despite Jeff's towering stature, he is still appropriately fatherly. Thanks, Eric Snyder. You're the reason I listen. Thanks, Film Cans.
I think that's a compliment to me.
How so?
He's just terribly intimidated by my prowess, my stature, the way that I carry myself. Like, that's, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to try to make that guy feel a little bit better about him.
Hey, good for you.
because that's maybe what he needs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was a callback to a previous iTunes review.
That was good. That was really good.
Nicely done. You write us a review on iTunes, we'll read it on the show in old-timey radio voice. That's how the system works. It's the only system left in America that still does what it's supposed to.
It really is.
It's the only one that's still functioning.
Oh, my gosh. Ah. You know, here's the thing, real quick.
Yeah?
I used to specifically say, when people were like, oh, what are you doing with your master's in journalism? Like, what's your focus or anything? My first answer would always be fluff.
Yeah.
Entertainment journal. Like, you know, it was just sure. Like, yeah, I just, you know, the fun stuff. Like, I don't want to be bogged down by fires, by crime, by any of this kind of stuff. I just, for me and who I am, I want to focus on artistic escapism.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
Thanks, Hollywood and the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, men, really, is who we're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I'm sorry. I mean, yes, absolutely. I really, like, you know, I've always wanted women to be in charge of everything.
Yeah.
But now it's just getting ridiculous.
I know. You've put women in charge of you, and that's worked out very well.
It's worked out pretty good.
No, remarkably well. Yeah. Speaking of groups where, I don't know, women should be in charge if they're not. Justice League. Let's talk League.
Let's talk Justice League. It feels like you're maybe accidentally bringing up one particular scene where Superman is kind of like, is it Superman or is it Batman? Who's kind of like Wonder Woman. Why aren't you a bigger deal? Have you ever thought about that? It was very interesting.
I don't think it was Superman.
Okay, then it must have been
Superman.
Batman
didn't have much dialogue. That's a spoiler that Superman's even in this movie, because Superman died in the last one, you remember.
Yeah, so everybody assumed that Superman the character would never appear in film again, let alone in this series. Everybody was definitive on that.
Huge spoiler, Superman does in fact come back in this movie. Although, you know, not till near the end. They get a lot done without him. Because if he had been there, it would have demonstrated that they actually don't need anyone other than Superman. Which has always been the problem with the Justice League. He can do everything that they can do. Anyway, so we got it's Batman, Bruce Wayne,
Ben Affleck.
And he's kind of older and paunchy, and he's had it. Oh, he's so had it with being Batman,
Hang
Bruce
on.
Wayne.
Paunchy?
Paunchy, a little paunchy, isn't he? He's a little thick.
Wow. All right.
Maybe just thick in the face. He just seems older and beefier and I don't know.
Yeah, he seems to have Ben Affleck's face a lot in this film.
He does have that. what's happening is there's some alien things have been showing up in Gotham and hereabouts, and they worry there's going to be another alien invasion. And the MacGuffin, the deal here is there's three boxes, three magic cubes. What do they call them?
Infinity boxes? Infinity stones. They probably call them that.
No, that's the other one. These ones, mother boxes. These are mother boxes.
I'm coming home, mother.
Mm-hmm. And you'll never guess who has. There are three different places. The Wonder Women's, the Amazons, they have one.
Amazonians,
but whatever they're called, they have one of these mother boxes. And then also, you remember who else has one?
The Aquamen.
The Aquamans. The Atlanteans. They've got one, because it turns out those are people. That's a thing.
Yeah, because way back when in Middle Earth, there were the Amazons and the Atlanteans and then the men.
And then you had the hobbits.
And they had to dig orcs. And they had to separate these because one ring doesn't rule them all.
Because when the three boxes get together, whoo, buddy, stand back. Bad news.
Yeah, purple tentacles get all over the earth.
I don't remember what happens, but bad stuff. And so they had to split them up. And the third one, of course, they gave to the tribes of men and humans. Hit it somewhere, but now there's a bad guy called Steppenwolf, and he is made out of CGI. He reminds me of the guy that Thor beat up in the first 5 minutes of the most recent Thor movie. The
big fire
dude,
so.
Yeah, that
yes.
guy.
Yeah,
he's going to gather the boxes and destroy the world or turn it into his own hellscape or something.
I think they actually give one sentence about Steppenwolf, and it's just like, he's determined to destroy everything.
He wants to turn he goes around turning worlds into be like his own world that he comes from, which is a fiery hellscape.
Yeah.
And so
that's it. And he doesn't have any depth whatsoever.
Very, very, very boring villain.
And he's voiced by
Kieran Hines.
How do you say his first name?
I believe it's Kieran.
Oh, that's good for me to know. Kieran. Hello, Kieran. I like him. Mm-hmm. I've liked him in other things. His voice is fine. This villain is pointless. Right. And I probably appreciated this movie more than you did. I just think this is, it's amazing that they would just do this stupid thing.
A useless
because
villain.
Not only that, the aliens, while they look a little bit scarier than what we've seen in the Marvel Avengers aliens, it's way too similar in like what their point of it all
and
is.
They're all just, sort of drones or scouts or pests, and so they can be killed by the thousands. But so this is a threat. So Bruce Wayne is gathering the team, putting the band together to fight against the evil. And it seems to me, I think the reason that this movie has such a lame, boring villain is that it has so much else that it has to do. And I feel like we've seen this before, where they're trying to establish lots of characters, lots of good guys, and so there's just no time to devote attention to the villain. It sort of becomes an afterthought. Because this really is about the gathering of the Justice League. He recruits, of course, Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, Diana Prince.
She was pretty much she was already hopping over the fence anyway.
Pretty much, yeah. She was on board. And then they gather the Flash. They don't ever call him the Flash. They don't ever call her Wonder Woman either, by the way.
Nope.
But Barry Allen, who is Ezra Miller, and
he's not called Comic Relief. He's actually no. Okay.
He's just Barry Allen, and he's really really fast. And
lightning makes him fast.
I think there's one line that he was hit by lightning, and that's sort of the simplified version of what happened to him. Again, we get backstory, a little bit of backstory on him, or actually, it's more that we are told that there is backstory on him. To be revealed later. He's got a father in prison for killing his mother, but he doesn't think that he really did it. So that's Billy Crudup is his father. So we're setting some things up for later.
I've always said Crudup.
I learned that it was Crudup on Jeopardy once.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, because Alex Trebek can't be wrong.
Because he said it that way, and Ken Jennings answered, who is Billy Crudup, apparently? Because Ken Jennings had thought it was Crudup, too, up until that point. Mm. What was my point? The Flash. I like Barry Allen. He's the character who was like Spider-Man when he met up with the Avengers, of like the really eager, like, hey, it's superheroes, this is fun. It's also kind of, he doesn't really understand his own powers, and he's scared, and I overall like his energy, I like his attitude. And I like his jawbone and cheekbones. You cut glass with the way Ezra Miller's face is made out of corners.
He's got a really, I won't say it, but he has a really good line when Bruce Wayne wants him to join the team. And it is, it's nice. It's nice that he's a part of things. Even if it is very recognizable, this kind of type of person joining a team. Also, sure. I did find the exact line for Steppenwolf. His description was, he lives only to conquer. There we go. Anyway,
you gotta live for something.
That's true. Then we have Aquaman, also known as Arthur Curry, played by Jason
Momoa.
Momoa.
Jason Mimosa. And
that'd be better.
Aquaman, he's a guy that lives under the ocean. And I guess he fights crime there. Is there crime under the ocean?
There's a little bit of crime, apparently. Otherwise, it's feeding poor people and not visiting his home.
Yeah, and he there's fishing villages in like Norway or somewhere that revere him because he'll show up with fish and feed them, which to me seems like a terrible misuse of his relationship with the fish to say, hey, my friends, let me feed you to my other friends.
Well, it apparently maybe that's not maybe Aquaman's relationship is not the exact same in this franchise as it has been in comic books,
because they do say
that's the impression that I got.
Batman asks him, so you talk to fish, and he says the water talks to the fish, sort of implying that he talks to the water. Aquaman can control the water, which we see him kind of do once, and I guess the water tells the fish. I guess I don't know.
You know what it kind of reminded me of? It reminded me a little bit of there was that one Simpsons episode where there's a spinoff. And the spinoff is Chief Wiggum and
New Orleans. Yeah, they go to New Orleans and lives on a houseboat. Yeah, yeah.
and he's always got to like it's the boat everywhere. But here it's like they forgot water.
Yeah.
They forgot to have access to water around any sort of thing. So I was just kind of waiting for him to kind of complain a little bit, but Aquaman seemed totally fine not being in water and not mentioning water and not mentioning whales and all the other cool things that could have happened.
Here's some other fun things that Aquaman says. He says, "My man!
My man! My man!"
And, "Yeah!" and things like that. He's Aqua Bro.
But he also drinks whiskey out of a bottle, smashes it, and has the white stripes cranking while he's walking around. And I'm a sucker for that because part of me was just like, all right, I can kind of see him doing his Aquaman thing.
I mean, things that you mentioned, those are cool, but they in no way take away from my calling him a bro.
No, that's true.
Not at all.
But at least with this spinoff, I think we'll probably be having Amber Heard, apparently, who's in this movie for a second.
He Aquaman, it's funny that through the whole movie, I kept thinking about him exactly what you would think that you'd be thinking about Aquaman in a Justice League movie, which is, what's Aquaman doing there? Like, what do they need him for? They're not in the water. I mean, he's strong, apparently. He can fight, I guess. Yeah. But and we still don't know what his powers are. We still do not know what he can actually do other than be strong and kind of control the water like most of the Red Sea.
A little bit,
So them, who else? Is there somebody? Oh, then there's Cyborg.
Oof.
They don't ever call him Cyborg, but Victor
Cyborg
Stone.
Has to be like from a Hulu or Netflix show. Like in the like character development and everything felt like it was not even, I shouldn't say Netflix or Hulu. I should say like CW 15 years ago. Mm. It just felt stale. As soon as you like got to know him, it felt stale because they don't really explain again what the heck he's going through, because on one stage he's clearly still human.
His father did experiments on him for science, using one of the mother boxes, also known as the change engine, that came up in one of the previous movies. They used that in an accident, and so now his body is like turning cyborgy, and he can't control it, which is interesting, but not developed. They really just rushed through his whole origin, and again, we're left with this guy who's very dour and sad and bitter about everything all the time.
Well, except when he has one of the worst final catchphrases that these superhero films have offered.
Is it booyah?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Booyah. A cyborg decided booyah was logically the best thing to say in front of others when he's helping destroy a villain.
I think what you mean is a screenwriter decided that the black character should say booyah when something happens. And then, you know, the other people are involved. You know, Alfred, Lois Lane is hanging around.
I need Amy Adams to escape DC. I need that to happen. But wait. So the action sequences that don't heavily involve Steppenwolf and his CGI character, I think, are pretty fun and pretty cool. Yeah. There's a couple of just great moments with Flash playing off of either Superman or Wonder Woman for me. Mm-hmm, like, that's a lot of fun. And even surprisingly, when they get to Superman and you see what they're going to spend 10 to 20 minutes doing because Superman's now awake and, you know,
disoriented.
I thought that was pretty cool, too. So
I think what the story should have been, I think it should have started. The first half should have been resurrecting Superman. And then with the team together, now let's fight as a team. I think that would have worked better, especially since we know Superman's coming back anyway. Like, just get to it. Don't make that the climax of the movie, which it's not the climax, but it's the right before the climax. And just bring him back right away, and do, because I agree. I liked all that, the confusion where he's, and you know, all that. That all worked really well, and play that up. And I just think the order was wrong.
Right, because he has Superman has a mini escape here, and it could have been an hour and a half escape when, like, we, you know, maybe he's awake, but we, even though we know he'll come back, maybe Batman doesn't, and that's enough.
Right. That could have been good.
Yeah. Right. Oh, goodness. There is also one single Russian family that we're supposed to care about. And that is just
random
terrible.
Russian family. Yeah, yeah.
One random Russian family who I think collectively are given, I don't know, 10 words to say. I have no idea. It was just, that was a shame.
It's less of a mess than you might think, knowing that Zack Snyder directed most of it and that then stepped out because of personal issues. And then Joss Whedon took over. And Joss Whedon rewrote enough of the screenplay to get co-screenplay credit, mm-hmm. although not director credit. It's just Zack Snyder. I'm surprised the movie isn't more disjointed and kind of a mess. There's no way we'll ever know, of course, without asking them, but I feel like I identified scenes that were written by Joss Whedon. Like, I feel like I recognize his cadence, his rhythm, his style.
Agreed.
But, and it's got some fun moments. Like I said, I like The Flash a lot. Wonder Woman is fine. You know. There's a really good moment with the Truth Lasso.
There is.
Also had a good bit with that.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of moments.
Yeah.
In this, and at least it's not too long. It's under 2 hours. What's the actual running time? I don't know. It's exactly 2 hours.
It really did have me thinking a lot about the second Avengers film.
Mm.
And it was just like, okay, like there's some good things here. The second Avengers film, I think, is longer though than this, and
it
honestly did feel nice when I looked at, and I was just like, oh my gosh, just under 2 hours.
Yeah,
I'm so surprised. Oh, there's two end credit scenes.
Yeah, one of the credits, one at the very end that's setting up what will happen next. Yeah. It was. Did you know a thing about Henry Cavill's mustache?
I had heard something, but I didn't really pay attention or focus on it. And I am dumbfounded that this didn't distract me the whole time that he was on screen.
He had grown a mustache for whatever his next part was, and then they called him back to do some reshoots. And rather than shave the mustache and use a fake mustache for his other thing, he kept the mustache and they used CGI to remove it in the scenes where it was. And knowing that that was the case and I was looking for it, I could see the scenes that must have been the reshoots where his upper lip doesn't move. So it's a little distracting, but I guess if you're not looking for it, maybe you wouldn't see it. I was definitely looking for it.
Yeah.
I'll own that. What else? It's all right. I think it would have been better, like with the Marvel movies, if they had established these characters first and then brought them together.
Yeah.
Just because it's so much to throw them all in together, sort of like Suicide Squad. Tossing them all in together and wanting us to already be committed to this team. I think there's potential here, but this one's like a C+.
Yeah, it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
All right. Next up, we got Lady Bird.
Yes, we do.
And directed by Greta Gerwig.
The wonderful Greta Gerwig. The
wonderful, indispensable Greta Gerwig. She co-wrote and starred in Frances Ha and Mistress America, which Noah Baumbach directed, her boyfriend, and now she don't need him for this now. Wrote and directed her own self. And
let me take you back to a simpler time.
Tell me.
Well, actually, never mind. It's not a simpler time. 2002 and Sacramento. Who doesn't want to hang out more? Don't you always say to me after a movie's over, if only that could have been set in Sacramento?
Yeah, as she calls in the movie, the Midwest of California. It's funny. You didn't see Brad's Status, did you? Stiller.
Yeah.
That movie, he's also from Sacramento and is self-conscious about being from Sacramento. I feel bad for Sacramento. It's getting it bad this year.
Yeah, but I think Sacramento kind of knows.
I think it probably deserves it. But this is an autobiographical comedy by Greta Gerwig, and her 17-year-old version of herself is played by Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse.
Marvelous young Irish actress, and she plays Christine, who has given herself the nickname Lady Bird. Is that your given name? Yes. Why is it in quotation marks? I gave it to myself. It's a given name given to me by me, or something. Words to that effect.
I love Lady Bird.
Me too. The character or the movie or both?
The character.
Yeah. Call herself Lady Bird just as a quirky affectation. Now I'm concerned what they're going to call the movie about Lyndon Johnson's wife.
I know.
Like someday they'll make a movie about her and they won't be able to call it Lady Bird. college. Anyway, so it's 2002 in Sacramento, and Lady Bird, senior year of high school, Catholic school.
It's pretty much a year in the life of.
Yeah.
That's what we have upon
she
us.
She wants to go
film.
As far east as possible for college. Her mom, who's Laurie Metcalf, who's great.
Oh, my goodness.
Is like, be real. You don't have the good enough grades. The schools are too expensive. Mom's being realistic. And I love the mother-daughter dynamic. I think it's natural
and
realistic. The way that teenage girls and their mothers tend to be at odds with each other. But then also moments where they have things in common. Like there's a great moment where they're at the thrift store looking for a dress for her, and they're arguing, and they both see a dress they like, and they, oh, we agree on that. And just like that, the relationship can be all cleaned up, and we love each other again.
You know what's crazy?
Tell me.
Laurie Metcalf hasn't been in a film besides voice work since 2008. She did TV work.
Yeah.
Loves to be on Broadway. She's a phenomenal actress.
Yeah, I just think of her as more as a TV and stage actress, I guess, than movies.
I just honestly think it's a shame that there aren't more parts like this for her to knock out of the park, because she was great in this film.
Maybe she doesn't want them. Maybe she prefers
That's true.
Stage acting.
That's true.
But yes, if Laurie Metcalf wants to do more work in movies, she should be able to, because she is terrific. Mm-hmm. The father here is played by Tracy Letts, who's also good.
Yep.
Sort of puttering around in the background while mom plays bad cop with Lady Bird. Senior year of college, she got a best friend who's kind of dumpy, and they're not like unpopular, but they're sort of middle of the road popularity. And Lady Bird meets a couple of boys who have wider social circles, and you know, the usual teenage girl coming of age. Who are my real friends? Yeah. What kind of person do I want to be?
Disappointed that in her description, on the wrong side of the tracks, like, because there's definitely a higher class element in the high school and actually in the city of Sacramento.
And she's very self-conscious about living not in the fancy part of town, and about not having very much money and all that. It's impressive how many things to get crammed into this 93-minute movie. There's the loss of virginity. There's surprise homosexuality and depression and unemployment and class struggles and all these things going on. But it's all treated with such humor and warmth.
Yes, even the difficult moments where there's some scenes where you're kind of caught off guard that you're going to head in a certain direction, and then again, that warmth you're talking about brings you right back, even though it's not necessarily that you – again, I said I love Lady Bird as a character. You know, she definitely is a little self-obsessed.
Absolutely.
And not only that, unrealistic in her future, even though she's chasing something that she definitely wants. She's kind of half-assing her senior year in general.
Yeah.
It's all. Oh
but,
my
but
gosh.
All of that is very relatable, because I think any story, any coming of age story about a teenager, boy or girl, is going to be probably about that teenager being self-absorbed and unrealistic, and sort of that's what coming of age means, I guess, sort of coming to be an adult and realizing how the world works. And it's nice that we don't. I mean, she is kind of a brat sometimes, but we like her, we understand her, and we realize much sooner than she does that her mom is not her enemy; she's her best friend, and is looking out for her.
Still, pick. She's so mean at times.
She is.
When she doesn't mean to be.
She doesn't mean to be, but she
It's like she can't change her programming.
Mom sort of has this reflex, of criticizing.
And, oh my gosh, it is like that's the thing where sometimes it is cringeworthy at times where you're just like, please love your daughter differently. Just do it for a second, please. But it's also what makes the rhythm of this film so much fun to watch.
Very funny and nice and natural. It all feels real. I don't know how many of the incidents in the film actually happened. There's one early in the film in the car. That great moment in the car. I don't know if Greta Gerwig really did that, but it feels true. It feels like a true thing that happened. And the whole movie feels that way. Everything feels – there's nothing as contrived or phony.
Yeah, and even it's set in 2002. The music plays a role, specifically Dave Matthews' song. And I – a Dave Matthews song that I worshipped forever. Oh, you can add that to the list.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You worshipped Dave Matthews' band Crash.
Yeah. And you know, it feels even though my audience was laughing a good bit, it still works dramatically as well for those characters, even though there's definite humor in it. And there's also, I believe there was only two 9/11 references, but the way that they did it worked really well in setting the stage of the time that they lived in.
Living in a recently 9/11, post-9/11 world. Yeah, the world all feels very authentic and lived in. Details about Lady Bird's got an older brother who apparently was adopted. And just the details of all that are just sort of implied, hinted at. We sort of get the picture without having it all spelled out for us.
Almost too hinted at. There was one, also there was one side character, the African American priest who was in, what is his name?
He was, Stephen Henderson, the drama teacher,
It was fantastic in Fences. Here, it felt like there was one scene and I needed one more, or I needed to be a little bit longer to fully contextualize what they were trying to get at.
Yeah, I think
with that particular character, not a big deal, just something that, you know, it left me hanging in a way that I don't think the movie intended.
I was thinking about that too, and I think it was meant to add to the overall flavor of this idea that everyone's got problems, that we're all struggling through this life, sometimes secretly, sometimes not, and just sort of everywhere around there are people who are going through things, and you're not the only person in the world, you brat.
And it's nice to see Lucas Hedges is one of the boys that is in Lady Bird's view, and he does a wonderful job, especially as a high schooler trying to act like in this play. I think it was just a really lovely job by him too.
It's terrific stuff. Really, really like Lady Bird a lot. I give Lady Bird an A-.
I give Lady Bird a 9 out of 10, and I can't wait for a screener to show up so I can watch it again with my wife.
BS approved. And when it's over, it really makes you want to pick up the phone and call Laurie Metcalf. or your mom or whoever. But yeah.
Oh, Laurie.
All right, now we have several more reviews to do. Some catching up, some new ones this week, and to make sure we can get through them all, we're going to impose Senate rules. So the person reviewing the film will have 90 seconds to speak on the film. The non-reviewer may interrupt by raising his hand and signaling. The speaker's time will pause. The person will ask his question. The speaker will continue and answer the question. That way we're not interrupting each other too much, and we're able to get through the films to let you, the people, know what's going on in this world. All right, are we ready?
Ready.
I'll proceed. First, we have a movie called Wonder, and My Time Begins Now. It was directed by Stephen Chbosky, who directed Perks of Being a Wallflower. And it's based on a novel and about a little boy named Augie, who's 10 years old, and he's differently faced. Got some face issues, born birth defects and whatnot. So he's got, you know, face, and kids make fun of him like they do. The makeup is Jacob Tremblay. Yes, Senator.
Is this a prequel to the movie Mask?
It is not.
Okay.
Augie is played by Jacob Tremblay from The Room, or from Room. And they do a really good job with the makeup. I thought it must be a regular kid that they put makeup on. I thought I could see the seams in it, but by the end of the movie, I convinced myself they actually just got a kid with facial deformities. But they didn't. It's Jacob Tremblay. And it's a very sweet movie. It's the kind of movie where opponents are converted rather than vanquished. Like the mean kids in school come around rather than getting punished. You know what I mean? Rather than getting comeuppance. And it's in a world where parents and teachers are supportive of their kids. Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson are the parents. If you told me Owen Wilson and Julia Roberts would play the parents of a boy with facial deformities, I would have believed you. I didn't think it would have gone this way. It's a very nice. It's sentimental, of course, and about kindness, but it's not in a phony or a sappy way. It's a very honest, authentic way. Really nice performances about nice people being kind to each other, and I really quite like it. It's a lovely, lovely yes.
Now I noticed you didn't mention Mandy Patinkin. How much does his character name come into play in this film?
Yes, Mr. Tushman. Mr. Tushman is the he's the principal at the fancy prep school. They don't deal with his name, which is strange to me. But you know, what are you going to do? It's a nice movie and suitable for families and kids, and it's lovely. And I give Wonder a B. And then next we have The Star. Finally, someone tells the story of how Jesus was born. Now, I know you think you know the story, but no, the story actually involves donkeys more than you realized. It's a cartoon with about a donkey, voiced by Steven Yuen from Walking Dead. He's a donkey who lives in Nazareth, and he wants to be more, and he escapes from the mill where he works and ends up being the pet of Mary and Joseph, and then using his animal contacts, he's friends with there's a dove, Dave the Dove, who knows stuff, and there's a helpful sheep named Ruth. With their help, yes, Senator.
You said pet.
Yes.
The donkey is a pet.
Sort of becomes the pet of Mary and Joseph, yeah.
Does he live inside?
No, outside where donkeys would be. But yeah, and Joseph is jealous of him because Mary likes the doggy so much. Just to give the story more conflict. Later, Dave the Dove doesn't like Ruth the Sheep either for the same reason, just because. They got to save Mary and Joseph from King Herod's goons who were looking for babies. It's very pretty faithful to the gospel account of the birth of Jesus, obviously with the creative liberties with the animals, but you can tell they were trying to keep it off true to the source material, reverent, faithful sort of movie. It's almost funny sometimes, but always in a very respectful way. Yes, sir.
I was going to say there's some funny people in the voices. Who's the funniest here?
I know. You know that they don't write the movies. These funny people. Yeah,
that's right.
Nobody's funny. Tracy Morgan is a camel. He's kind of funny because he's Tracy Morgan. But, no. The very first joke made me laugh. The on-screen titles say, Nazareth, 9 months B.C. And that's when the angel comes to Mary. That made me laugh. Yeah. There's almost comedy in things like where Mary has to have the conversation so Joseph, I have something to tell you. Like there's sort of naturally some comedy in that the movie sort of hints at, but doesn't lean too far into it. And it's a nice enough spiritual story, for families. If you're a Christian family, want to see something nice. Yes.
I think it's insane that there's 17 actors in this film that you would, most likely recognize by name.
Big cast. Tyler Perry, Christopher Plummer, Oprah, etc. Adi Bryant, Zachary Levi, Kristen Chenoweth, and so on. It's fine. It's a B minus. And now you've got Only the Brave, right?
Yes.
All right. 90 seconds on the clock.
Finally got around to seeing it. Saw it with my nephew. It's based on the Granite Mountain Hot Shots, which is a real-life group of elite firefighters that were trained, and when their town goes up, they go in, and they also go around the nation helping as well. Josh Brolin leads the crew, loved his character, but more importantly, in this context, he's married to a real-life woman who has things to do besides just be on the phone and be worried about her husband. Jennifer Connelly steals this show every time she's in the scene.
You're saying Jennifer Connelly does not just play concerned wife on phone.
I am saying she does not. She does have a moment of concern on the phone. So she does hit that category. But right now she is the leader in the clubhouse of all concerned wives on all phones in the history of film. Miles Teller is a junkie trying to make good on his life. And that shocked me as far as how much they went into it, how much struggle he actually had. Jeff Bridges, I believe, signed up for the film with the condition that he would get to sing a song in a bar. So there's that.
He also, Jeff Bridges, he's still doing his True Grit character, right?
Yes.
He's still doing that voice. He has not stopped doing that voice.
That's right. And Taylor Kitsch is cool sidekick guy in this film, and he fits that role really well. All in all, it is just a really good movie about community about working hard for something you care about and taking risks, even though there can be some serious consequences. I really had a good time with this film, even though like heartfelt, sad at times, all of that kind of stuff. I was shocked how much I liked it.
Excellent. What do you give it?
8 out of 10.
And then I have one more catching up from last week, Murder on the Orient Express. This is based on an Agatha Christie novel. It was also a movie in 1974. A fine movie, by the way. You should check it out. All-star cast, like this one. Only better. And this is Kenneth Branagh directed this version and plays the lead character, Hercule Poirot, who's a Belgian detective. And he's got mustaches. His mustache is a mustache. Amazing mustaches in the film. I was fixated on them, fascinated by the mustaches. And they're on a train, and somebody gets murdered. And it's Johnny Depp gets murdered, by the way, in case you want to see that. Yes.
I feel like that's the part he's born to play, like right now.
I really think the movie would have made more money if they had said in the commercials that it's Johnny Depp that gets killed. Yep. I feel like that would have attracted more people. If you already know how the story goes from having read the book or seen the previous movie, for me, that's just sort of lost some of its appeal, already knowing where the story was going to go. I think some parts of it are rushed. There's some clues that are set up and then never redeemed, and a few things that are that are redeemed in the final summation that had not been established earlier. That we sort of have to assume, oh, I guess he figured that out in some scene that we didn't see or whatever. It's good to see a lot of the people. Michelle Pfeiffer is a man-hunting woman looking for a new husband, rich lady. Judy Dench is an old Russian princess. You got, who else is in here? Daisy Ridley. Somebody else I liked. Who else did I like? Penelope Cruz doesn't get anything to do. Josh Gad isn't bad. But in the 1974 one, he was Anthony Perkins. Yes, Senator.
Yes, with Daisy Ridley. Was it easily acceptable to see her as something other than a Star Wars character? Like, did she do well here?
Oh, yeah, she's fine. Yeah,
also,
yeah.
I heard Penelope Cruz was not the usual Penelope Cruz.
Her character gets the short shrift, unfortunately. She really doesn't have much to do. And in the 74 version, that was Ingrid Bergman, and she got like this big 5-minute monologue.
Oh.
Just saying, if you can see the 74 one, it's better. It's all around better than this one. This one's all right, but like I say, loses something in being familiar and in sort of being rushed through, yes?
Okay. If I don't remember the original, what do you recommend I do here? Forget this one altogether.
No, this one is
see
not.
See the original.
This one is not.
Or see this one, then see something better.
This one is not. It shouldn't be avoided or shunned. It's a C+, I think is what I give it. Yeah, C+. So sort of, if you don't remember the story, then yeah, it's probably worth seeing. A little self-serious at times. Like sometimes they lay it on thick with the whole, I've seen the soul of humanity crushed or whatever. It's like, you know, it's supposed to be a fun murder mystery. Give it a rest. Take it down a notch. Your speeches. Anyway, C+. On DVD this week, new for you, Atomic Blonde. We liked that, right?
I very much liked that movie. Yeah.
I wonder how much I'll like it the second time.
Yeah, I
but it's good once anyway, for sure. Then Brigsby Bear, which I quite liked. Kyle Mooney's movie.
Me too.
Very, very peculiar comedy and strangely heartwarming about like family and friends and loving each other and stuff. And then Wind River, which I liked a lot. And did you like a lot or kind of?
No, I liked it.
Okay.
I referred to it as very solid.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen investigating a murder on an Indian reservation. And yeah, we actually have a copy of Wind River to give away.
Mm-hmm.
To one of our lucky agents. If you are an agent and if you haven't won anything in the last 6 months, send us an email. What's our email address, Jeff?
Our email address is bayer. Oh, wait. No.
Oh, my gosh.
moviebspdx@gmail.com.
That's right. It's always a fun adventure whether you're going to know our email address or not.
I agree.
Every time I throw it to you, it's always a little bit of a little suspense.
Here's the weird part. I know the start, although I was kidding. Let's say I was kidding with this one.
Sure. All right.
So I know the start, and while I'm starting to say it, I wonder if my brain will finish it correctly.
So it's a moment of suspense for you too.
So this time I almost said .pdx.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Good job. So if you're an agent, send us an email if you like a copy of Wind River, and we'll give that away. And that's it for this.
Well, let's not forget one more thing.
What one more thing?
Well, people, they have a little homework over the holidays. The movie of the month, let's not forget it.
Yes.
It is Grave of the Fireflies. And if you are curious how one would watch it, it looks like iTunes is your one and only source, besides good old-fashioned video stores. You could rent it for $3.99. You could buy it for $7.99.
This is a movie.
What are you going to do?
It has been recommended to us by many people on many occasions as being a good animated Japanese film that will make us cry. And so we're
like
finally
minutes.
Going to see it. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen it, do so. And we'll talk about it on the first show of December. You got a couple more weeks for that. And that brings us to the end of this show, this episode right here that we just did. Here's what we learned. Justice League.
You can sit through it.
Yeah. Won't hurt you.
Yep.
Lady Bird is terrific. Go see Lady Bird.
It's
so nice. Wonder is good. Good, solid family. Nice movie. Not too sappy. The Star, a little bit less good. Very plastic and cheap looking animation. I forgot to mention on that. I'm sure it cost a lot of money, but it doesn't look like it did. But it's fine for a Christmas cartoon for the family. For the Christian family. If you're not Christian, probably not interested. and Only the Brave, you say, is very good.
Yeah, definitely check out Only the Brave if it's still available, or do a second run, or just like bookmark it when it's ready to be rented.
And Johnny Depp gets murdered on the Orient Express. If they called it that, if that were the title, $100 million opening.
Boom.
It's also all right. Won't hurt you to watch it. Even better if you don't already know the story. And so that's the end of this show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, we did it.
Yeah.
So until next week for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thank you for listening and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.